So we're holding today on Daf Hey Amud Beis, and yesterday we went through the very careful balance that we strike between the inyonim of the Baal Yera'eh and the Baal Yematzeh, the difference between Shelcha, or whether it's anything. So we had the Shivas Yomim Sa'or Lo Yematzeh Bivatechem, but over there it doesn't talk about it's necessarily having to be yours. And the balance between that and the lo yera'eh, where it's the question of that it's yours, shachaya taro'eh, and so on. We ended up with a very interesting balance that we need to complete today. Whoops, let me get back to where we were. And so I believe that we got up to the two dots. Am I right? On the big line, or we went further even? Well, where did we get up to? Yeah, of course we got up to the big line, at least. The question is, did I go further? Okay, I believe we got up to the top of the big lines. So, and if not, sorry, a little bit further, I thought so. Okay, so we'll start again. So what we came out was, so now I'm very confused. We had two psukim. On the one hand, we said, that means that it's got to be yours. If it isn't yours, there's no problem. And that's how we came out. And now you're saying, but since it says lo yimatzei, now you cannot take anything from a goy. But then, I understand, but it's not mine. It's ridiculous. How can one pasuk say yes and one pasuk say no? So therefore, we came out yesterday that it depends. Lo kasha, ha dekabel alav achrayut, ha delo kabel alav achrayut. It all depends on whether you are responsible for that chametz. If you're responsible for the goy's chametz, then that responsibility makes it your own. We'll see why that would be true. And if there's no responsibility, so then fine, it's not yours. What's the difference? Ki hodi amalu Rav levnei Mechuza. Now Rav, you'll remember, was the Rav, the Rosh Yeshiva in Mechuza. And over there, the government used to force the people in town to bivouac, the soldiers, keep the food for soldiers in their house, and they would be called upon to bring it out as necessary. Well, a lot of that food was chametz, so what were they able to do with the chametz? So Rav said to them, you better get rid of the chametz of the army. So get it out of your house. Because kivan de'ilu mignav, ve'ilu mit, but look, if anything happens to it, you're responsible for it, right? And then ba'ita l'shlumi, and then you're going to have to pay. Then that means that for all intents and purposes, it's yours. And if it's yours, then that's what the Torah said, that you cannot have even a goy's chometz in your possession. So now it's quite clear from here that that means mamish lahalacha. That doesn't mean that they're going to have to actually end up paying for all of this chometz because they went and burnt it. He wasn't saying you need to burn it. I mean, they could have sold it to somebody else, or they could have given it to a goy and paid him to take care of it and whatever. But in any event, it would require someone else to be mekabel achrayus. That's what Rava was saying. If you get a goy to be mekabel achrayus on it, then it's not your achrayus. So the question is, why? How does this work? How is the fact that you accept responsibility for someone's money, how does that make it your money? Now, I understand how that's possible, according to the principle of Dover Agorim L'mamet K'mamet Dami. So there we had a very fascinating machlokas about what is the din. Let's say somebody steals from Hegdesh. So normally the halacha is that Re'ehu tells me that there is no din of responsibility to pay kefel, let's say, to Hegdesh, the way there is to pay kefel, which is a double payment if you're stealing from another person, just a regular, another Jew. But the problem is, according to Rabbi Shimon, since a dovra gorm l'momen is k'momen dami, so then if the person that you stole from had been mekabel this korban as a neder, which means that he accepted responsibility for hekdash, if anything happens to it, he's going to have to pay for it. So long as he had that carbon in his rishus, he was able to use that carbon in lieu of financial payment to Hegdash. And therefore, it's considered to be a davar hagorem lamamon. Not having this thing costs me exactly what it costs to actually buy the thing in the first place, right? So if I have it, that means, wow, you just gave me the full value of the thing. That type of value is called ownership. So I understand how that works over here. Because since having that chometz in my rishus is worth its full value to me, since it equals the amount of money that I owe for it if anything happens to it, so then I can understand why the Torah would differentiate between the mammon that you're responsible for and the mammon that you're not responsible for. And even though it's a din of lecha, this is enough lecha, because the davar gram lamammon is kamama dami. But what if you don't hold of Rabbi Shimon? What if you hold that, okay, that's just called something that is can cause you a loss, but I mean, it's not really yours, is it? It just represents something that could prevent the loss of something. That's not called current value. So according to the other Mandi Omer, it says, davar gram lamammon is not considered to be mammon. How do you explain the fact that all of a sudden, when it comes to Goy, on Pesach, his money is considered to be your money because you're going to be responsible for it? Now, that seems to be a violation of the general concepts of ownership. Says the Gemara, isn't that the whole point? Didn't we have two psukim? One of which talks about lecha. Now, lecha would have meant the lo yera elecha is normally defined ownership. It's yours. The other pasuk said lo yimatze. Well, what do you think lo yimatze means, man? Lo yimatze is adding something new, isn't it? It's not just repeating the difference between yours and not yours. It's saying that there's this new expansion of yours when it comes to chometz, where the Torah is more makbid on a broader definition of what would be called yours, because otherwise we wouldn't have added lo yimatze. So therefore, that's the whole point. Since it says lo yimatze, that changes the rules, and we don't follow the normal dinim of ownership when it comes to chometz, as opposed to anything else. Now, that makes a great deal of sense. As a matter of fact, it makes so much sense that some say we should just do the opposite. We should say, wait a minute, if you hold all over that davar gram lamammon is kamammon dami, why do I need a pasuk of lo yimatze? It is shelcha. So then the lo yimatze isn't coming to tell me anything. Whoa, that's a reversal, right? So ikeni amri, others say that anichal amani amar davar gram lamammon lav kamammon dami. So if normally this is not considered to be mammon, that explains why the Torah had to tell us a special pasuk of lo yimatze. But according to the Mandi Omer, that it is kamammon dami, so then it's already included in the lecha. So then what are we adding with the lo yimatze? I'm very confused. No, I still need it. I'll tell you why I still need it. It's true. Because Salka Daitach Amina, since if I had it in my rishos, it would be, in this case, I wouldn't owe anything. But let's consider owing. Owing only happens when something happens to it, right? Now, that's exactly the situation that we had with the stealing from Hector. Somebody walks off with my carbon. So on the surface, we're going to say, well, it's not yours. It belongs to Hegdash. So Rabbi Shimon comes along and says, I understand it belongs to Hegdash, but the fact that you took it away from him means that you took away something that he needs in order to pay up the debt that he currently has to Hegdash, right? So therefore, you took away that value, and it's the full moment. That's what Rabbi Shimon says. But suppose nothing had ever happened to it. It wasn't stolen, like in this case. Nothing happened to the chometz of B'nai Chayla. It's there. It has nothing to do with you at this point, other than the fact that it's in your garage, right? So in that case, I might have thought that davar gram lamammon doesn't kick in yet, because there is no monetary responsibility that I have for it now. Currently, it's yours, and I'm not even in the middle of the issue. So I might have thought that when do we say davar gram lamammon kamammon dami, that's only where there exists now a problem of my needing to pay, like the case of someone who stole my karma. So therefore, since it's currently here, that's not called mine. Kamash Malam, that lo yimatze, therefore, is coming to tell me that actually that too is considered to be in terms of chometz davar agorim lamammon. So we end up with this compromise in which we have two very different dinim. This should not be taken like the compromise of the BBs currently, in which in order to have the camera in the middle, you get neither BB. That is not the compromise of Valyera Bayimat saying we're actually trying to get both. Thank you. Okay, so now we understand this idea of the chelek of the Jewish value in what is actually a non-Jewish thing. Now, how about the inverse? There are places where ownership, if it even in partial ownership by a goy, which is interesting because, I mean, maybe we'd have thought there's an idea of the possibility of owing the money would be enough. There are cases we got to worry about this. Listen, suppose you have a bechor in your, an animal that's a bechor in your flock, right? And part of that flock is owned by a goy. So the halach over there is koshiad akum be'emtz, as we had back in Bechoris recently, that the idea is you are potter. Now, suppose you have the inverse of our situation, where the goy has a possibility of asserting his rights. For instance, suppose the government puts a 10% tax on flocks. So that would mean that theoretically they can come around and walk off with a animal that they select. So that would mean that the animal that is the bechor is actually open to being captured by the tax collectors and taken away legally. Does that give them currently a din of yad akum be'emtza, which would pater your korban bechor from the bechora, or not? Now you can see how it's exactly the same type of question that we're dealing with over here. At this point, nothing. It's just like a theory, which is very much what we're talking about over here. If anything would happen to the carbon, then you would be the one that would be responsible. If the government decides that they want to actuate the lien that they have to be able to take your animal, they could. So that's my next question. What would be the din of a behema that was all part of Arnona? So Arnona is the tax that would be placed on the various things that you make or that you have in your rishus. Is it chayevet bebechora or ein chayevet bebechora? Now, I want you to understand that what we're talking about over here, and this is what they asked Rava initially. It turns out that there's another way of looking at this. So, kolecha demotzi misalik lebezuzi lokami b'aylan dechayim. Look, if you would always be able to simply pay your taxes in cash, and then they would not be able to take that animal even if they wanted to. So the tax collector comes to the house. They say, listen, 10% of this flock we're walking off with. So you say, never mind, I need these animals. Here's the value in cash. And they wouldn't be able to have any other recourse. They'd have to accept that cash. So according to this this approach in the Gemara, there's no question. Of course you'll be chayav on the Bechorah because they don't really have a right to the animal. This is only like a right in the event that you don't pay up. Okay, so that's a lien that they would have to exercise at that point. So over there, for sure, you'd have to give the Bechorah. So what would be the din if you couldn't get rid of them? And if you couldn't get rid of them, I mean, we're not sure that they're going to come. We're certainly not sure that they're going to come and take this one or whatever, but they could. Is that enough to say that it's Yad Akum Bamtes? So Rava said, yes, it is. Potter. So we asked him, but doesn't it say Chayev in a Braita? No, it does say chayevet in a brisa, but remember we already explained that if you're able to buy off the tax collectors, so then everybody agrees that you're chayevet. That's what that brisa was talking about. So this is our first take on it. Now there's another way that starts with the opposite assumption. Ikedi Amri. Omar Rava, behemat arnona is actually potter mina bechora under any and all circumstances, even if you could pay them off, and they wouldn't be able to take the animal. The very fact that they have a lien against this flock means that they have some value in that bechor. So that's considered to be even more than a dover agorim lamoman in this version, right? But we'll see that it's not so pashut, and that there's really another issue, which is a gezeira, as we'll see. And that would be even if you could be misalik them with money. Isat Arnona, however, there was also a takona. This was a recent takona in the lovely government of the caliphate of ISIS, in which, you know, they decided that they would take a certain amount of your food, a certain amount of your flocks, all very legal, of course, certain number of your daughters as well, also all very legal. But anyway, so the idea over there was that your Isa, and there too we've got an issue, because if a goy owns the Isa, then you're not chayev in challah. because it's only Arisotechem and not Arisat Akum. And yet, for some reason, Rava says, look, there's a big difference between a Behemat Arnona, where over there you're always potter, even if basically he would be able to be Mesalik him. Whereas an Isat Arnona would be Chayev even if you can't be Mesalik, which really doesn't make any sense. I mean, either you're going to tell me that it is considered to be Yad Akum Amtsa or not. So how do you explain that? My Taima. No, it's very simple. The truth is that any involvement of the Akum takes away the uniqueness of the ownership of Yisrael and therefore the Kedusha of what it is that you have. It's an amazing idea. And therefore, there's no Bechora. You can't give a Bechora for something that isn't that which relates to the Kedushas Yisrael. There's no Kedushas Bechora. The same thing is true of Challah. It doesn't have within it the Kedusha to give to the Kohen, that it should be Nitfas in Challah. The only reason, says Rav, that I'm a Chalik between the animal and the Challah is a Gezerah. And that is that when it comes to the Isa, somebody watches you bake a challah and not take off challah, will suspect you of just not caring about challah. Masha Einkein, somebody who sees you not taking a bechor from a bechor, a well-known bechor, is not a problem, because when it comes to a behemas arnona, everybody knows about it. All the farmers in the area are aware of the problems of the tax authorities and what they've got their claws into. Masha Einkein, when it comes to an Isa, not everybody's aware of what's going on in your home and what it is that they're demanding and so on. And so because of that, it's a simple gezerah for this difference. But nonetheless, it is true, according to this version, that Rava holds any involvement whatsoever, even where Hechon HaMotzi Misalik, like, will pater you from the Bechorah. Astounding. Tana Rabbana. Okay, so now getting back to our question about what is my responsibility for a goy's chometz. Now, this is a very common situation. A delivery man comes in chewing a sandwich, you know, and he's coming into your house on Pesach, and he's got this delicious-looking pizza or whatever, and it's pure chometz. I mean, so do you need to shove him out of the house or put him down the toilet together with the chometz? What exactly are you supposed to do under those circumstances? So, Tana Rabbana, Nochrish nechnas l'chat seiro shel Yisrael, ubetzeko biyados, he's carrying a piece of pizza. It's not your problem. Izikuk l'va'er, you don't have to worry about it. He doesn't have to leave your house. It makes absolutely no difference. It's not your chometz. And there's no issue of not having chometz in your house because the delivery man is eating pizza. That's absurd, as we just learned. That's the idea of the lo yira'el l'cha. But what about if he's mafkid it to you, he gives it to you to hold for him, then you got to get rid of it. Zakuk leva'er. Now, of course, we just saw a minute ago that that is dependent on the question of whether you're mekabel achrayut or not, right? Fine. So, I mean, it's not like very clear what we're talking about. Yichid lo bayit. Now, there's two ways of understanding this. The simple way of understanding is the way Tosfos understands it, which is more the mashma'ut of the words. Yichid lo bayit means that I told him, look, I'm setting aside that closet or that bedroom for you. It's yours. Do whatever the heck you want. So then the issue would be that that part of the house is, for all intents and purposes, rented or given as a free rent or whatever you want to call it, but it doesn't fill the definition of my house anymore, because I've said, okay, look, you know, that's your area. That's what it seems to be saying. Now, for some crazy reason, Rashi keeps insisting throughout the sugya that yichid lo bayis does not mean what it usually means, that he set aside a particular area and said, this is yours. Because of that, he has to actually make the entire sugya very different than it appears on the surface, and it certainly seems to be a big dochuk. So what Rashi says is that yichid lo bayis in this case means that the guy says to the guy, look, I don't care, find yourself a place. Okay, so that's not usually called yichid lo bayis. But why is that? So Rashi explains the difference between not being yichid lo bayis and yes being yichid lo bayis is a question of whether did you accept responsibility? Because since Lamaisa, the Gemara says in Bava Metzia, that if you tell somebody who walks in and says, can I leave my backpack here? And you say, here, just put it down in front of me over here. So then that is accepting responsibility. If you say to him, okay, you find yourself a place, do whatever you want. You know, you're welcome to use my place. Then that's not considered to be Kabbalah Zacharias. So Rashi is saying that, look, basically this sugya isn't adding anything in terms of the Rishus. It just is a way of describing whether you were Mekabel Achrayut or not. Now, we're going to see that that is a very strange approach to the sugya, because the Gemara is going to go from it into an understanding of the dinim of Schirut and Lelo Yimatse and what a bayit is, which doesn't make any sense. Therefore, Tosfos says, what? I mean, why can't we just learn this the way we always learn it? And the question is whether it's considered to be your bias. Okay, we'll talk about this as we go along, but I think it's important for you to recognize that the Gemara is not necessarily on the level that it appears to be saying, like those who's learned, which is a simple way than anybody reading it. So if you give him a specific place, according to Tosfos, so then, Eno Zakuk Leva'er. But the problem is that it says the reason that it's Eno Zakuk Leva'er is because it says, Lo Yimatse. What? How are you bringing a raya that you don't have to when the Torah is telling you something is usher? What are you saying? Micah Amar. So Rav Papa, no. This piece is going back on the beginning, right, where it says that the other case, it says, if you gave it to the Jew and the Jew accepted achrayas, then he's got to get rid of it. Then skip to Shenemar Lo Yimatse. Because after all, did we not learn out from the pasuk of Lo Yimatse that we came out with this idea that the accepting of achrayas is enough to make it yours because of the expansion? We had the whole discussion 5 minutes ago. So what do we need to know that from Lo Yimatse? Why don't we just know it from the very idea of the Dovra Gorm Lamam? And fine, but the bottom line is that was the pasuk that we ended up understanding that Kabbalah Zacharias is considered to be Osir. So that must be what it means, says Rav Papa. We just skipped and we came to the end. Rav Ashi says, no. But come on. I mean, it certainly seems to be saying that the Lo Yimatse is explaining why it is that you don't have to get rid of it in the event that you were miyachid lo by it. So I think this is what it means. Okay, come on. Yiched lo bayit, eino zakuk leva'er, shenemar lo yimatse bevatechem. That's the point. That's it says lo yimatse. But since it says lo yimatse in your homes, and this is not your home, v'olav didehu, because since, again, look how perfectly this fits into Tosfos Pshat, that the goy, when he's going into that bedroom that you are miyached lo, he's going into his own area. So nochri kikoma ayo, lebesa the nafshe koma ayo. So therefore, in that case, there would be no problem. Okay, again, what in the world does this have to do with Kabbalah Zacharias? Let's first take a look at how Tosfos learns it, and then try to see whether we can make any sense out of Rashi. Ask the Gemara, which is even more pure Tosfos Pshat, oh, so you're telling me that by giving him a specific bedroom, that is like a rental that he owns? Does that mean that Schirut is actually a Kenyan? But how do you explain the fact that in Avodah Zorah we learned that there's a question, the Rabbanu made a takona not to rent houses to Ovde Avodah Zorah. So it says over there you can rent places for animals, but not for a home. Why is that? Because they bring in an Avodah Zorah, machnisu tochen Avodah Gilulim. They're going to bring in Avodah Zorah, and it says, lo yidbak b'yotcha b'umum anacherim, you can't have a cross in your house, for heaven's sakes, but why not? Isar kadaitak to schirus kanya. I mean, so then basically what you're saying is, the guy is bringing in the chometz, and it happens to be, I own the house, but I rented it to him by being miyachid in the area, right? So then why don't we say the same thing? This has nothing to do with me. I don't care what he's going to do in the house. He wants to make a church in the house. It's not my problem. It's not my house anymore because I rented it, which is Schirus Kanya. So then Kikoma Ayo, if he's bringing this Avodah Zorah into the house, he's bringing it into his own house. Lebet in Avshe. So why is that a problem? Answers the Gemara, fascinatingly, that since it says Lo Yimatse, then the rental is enough that it's not motzui biyotcha. It's not really in my hands, is it? I mean, I told the guy I don't have any rights over here, so it may not may technically be mine, but it isn't motzui to me. I don't even have the key anymore, maybe. So therefore, the Torah is saying that in this case, yotze zeshe ino motzui biyadecha. Now note, this is a very, very fascinating insight, because on the one hand, the lo yimatse is increasing the level of responsibility. because we said before, the lo yimatzei broadens the envelope of what is considered to be yours, right? That even if you don't, dover agram lamaman is lav kumaman, but since it says lo yimatzei here, it's extending the definition of bialas to include even if it's just available. It may not technically be yours, correct? So that was a chumra. Over here, we're using the same lo yimatzei, but in this context, it's a kula. Because by telling you that, look, but the only thing that you're not allowed to have if there is responsibility, which is the mokar that we learned out from lo yimatzei in the first place, is the idea of at least it needs to be motzi biyadecha. So therefore, even responsibility that's not motzi biyadecha is not included. So therefore, it turns out to also be a kula. Now, all of this is pure Tosfos's approach and fits in perfectly. Rashi understands that the entire thing revolves around the Kabbalat Achrayut, and that's all. So how in the world does he explain all of this stuff? Kima'ayel, or should say that Avshikama'ayel, and the relationship to bringing an Avodah Zorah into the house and so on. How in the world did that get involved in all of this, according to Rashi? It's very strange. And he keeps coming back to the idea of Achrayus. Because, in other words, Rashi holds we don't have two different definitions of what we're doing with Lo Yimatzei. What we're doing with Lo Yimatzei is talking about a level of ownership that is built around Achrayus. That was the only distinction we had. One is Halcha de Kibbalah Lav Achrayus, Halcha de Lo Kibbalah Lav Achrayus. Now, he doesn't hold that the Gemara is expanding this din into some new type of understanding of what is your home and what isn't your home. So therefore, Rashi says, look, it's all based around the question of, did my statement of put it down here, did that mean I'm accepting Achrayus or not accepting Achrayus? So therefore, if you're going to tell me that by telling him, you can put it down in a place that you want. So now that automatically means I never said that it's my business. It's your business. So I wasn't Mekabel Achrayus. But I don't understand. I mean, I said, put it down where you want. It's in my house, isn't it? So why isn't that the equivalent of put it down in front of me? So therefore, we're deriving from that, that in the same way that if you would tell him to put it in his own house, you're not telling him that you're going to be Mekabel Achrayus. If you're telling him you can put it where you want to put it, it's saying that for all intents and purposes, I don't have anything to do with it. It's like it's yours, in which case we would reach the conclusion that Schirus would certainly be like it's yours, right? That's how Rashi goes through it. But all of this is because of the fundamental determination of how is the Lo Yimatzei functioning. Is it really two completely different issues, the way that Tosfos learns? One, a broadening of the concept of the legality of ownership, and then the other, something which tends towards chumra, and then the other, a completely different issue of accessibility in a home? That is strange, says Rashi. Yet, according to Tosfos, that's exactly what's coming out. That, according to Tosfos, there's two different issues. One is a chumra, and one is a kula. According to Rashi, they're all derivatives of the same basic idea. That's the way most understand Rashi. There's a lot of discussion of this Rashi, as you can see. But I think that makes the most simple sense in Rashi. Okay. Omer Rav Yehuda, Omer Rav. Hamotzei chametz bebeito biyom tov. So here you are, happily having a yontev, and all of a sudden in walks your two-year-old holding a challah. Oh my God. Well, I didn't realize that they were playing with challahs in the children's playroom. Good heavens, what do I do now? Now, you can't even pick up this challah and throw it away in the toilet. Why? Because it's muktzah. Because the chometz has absolutely no use on Pesach, and you were mevato your chometz, so you're not going to be over on Bayira Bayimatzeh, but, I mean, it's not very pleasant. I mean, what if somebody just walks and eats the challah not thinking about it? So what do? Well, you take a big pot and put it over it. Just don't let your wife see, because then she'll throw the pot out. So put something over the chometz. Maybe it's better if it's a garbage pail. Right? Take the chometz, stick a garbage pail. Don't do this to your Pesach, stick a garbage pail now, or also she'll throw that out loud. But take your old chometz, stick a garbage pail, and cover the challah with the garbage pail. Because that way, no way he's going to come to eat it. On my Rava, but if it turns out that this was something that belonged to Hagedish, let's say you had had in the house some chometz that you were setting aside to give to Hegdesh, then you do not have to worry about it. Why not? Because, look, remember one of the big problems of Chometz, and the reason that we're so makpin on all of this and this idea, maybe you'll come to eat it and so on, is because you're not bodo minei the whole year. This is like second nature. You see something yummy, oh, what a nice cookie, and you pop it into your mouth, right? I remember one of the most embarrassing things that happened to me. I think it was about, I don't know, I must have been probably 6 years old, maybe 7 years old. So it was like, you know, the little Yiddish grocery store in the neighborhood, you know, and the little Yiddish grocery store, you know, had the little the pretzels in the plastic, clear plastic cover glass at that time. The pretzels are inside. You would buy one pretzel at a time for your kid. You gave a penny for a couple of pretzels. Okay, fine. So anyway, in those days, the Yiddish grocery store sold his chametz. But he sold his chametz while it was Pesach too. You know, so he signed the shtar, but, you know, people, the goyim in the street would walk in and buy the pretzels. Okay, so I walk into the store and, oh, wow, look at those pretzels. They look yummy and I have a penny. So I say to the guy, so give me two pretzels. He looks at me in horror, like, you're supposed to be the rabbi's son? You're asking for pretzels on Pesach? Oh, my God. I went out of there. Bibbis Yonis. Anyway, so this is how easy it is to make this mistake. It's crazy. I like still remember the burning sensation of embarrassment. So the idea of Hegdash is different because Hegdash, you know very well, I'm always sensitive that I never would ever get near taking Hegdash. So it's not going to be any different on Pesach. You don't have to protect Hegdash all year round. So why would you have to extra protect it on Pesach? The Omer of Yudam Arav, if you've got the chometz of a Nochri in your house, so now you've agreed to allow him to keep chometz there, you have no responsibility for it. Well, we just said that's okay. If the delivery man is bringing in a pizza, that's okay. But over here, it's all very nice to say kofa lovas akli, but remember the kofa lovas akli, not to come to eat it. That was talking about for the next 5 hours. You found it in the middle of Yontif. So tonight you're going to throw it in the toilet, right? But it's not going to be that way the whole Pesach. Somebody's going to move it, and then someone will come. Certainly, and it's not lechatchila. It's only because your little kid came in carrying it, and therefore, oh, what am I going to do now? But if you want to accept the chometz of the Nochri, then there has to be a set permanent understanding of how we're going to make sure nobody's going to eat this. You need to have a mechitza in front of it. So make sure of that because it's got to last all Yom Tov. So therefore, the mechitza in front of it has to at least be 10 tefachim high because otherwise there's no real heker. Now, again, so it says over here, im shal hek, the shu'ein otzarech, but since when it comes to Hegdash, there's no problem, you can have like a whole cabinet full in your kitchen of chametz open, and there's no problem. Wow. Yeah, because you could have Hegdash in your kitchen during the year open, and it's big isser, you're going to be moil by Hegdash if you take it, but you won't take it. Exactly. So the same thing is true over here. It's not yours. You don't have to worry about it. The Torah never answered it. So it's very important to understand what it is that we're talking about. We wrote by Yamatze, the idea of putting up a mechitza has nothing to do with lo yera'eh. Oh, look, I'm looking at the chometz. You could look at the chometz. The problem is not if it's going to possibly cause you to eat it, since by Hegdash it won't. Therefore, there's no din of mechitza. Since by a goy it will, because you're not used to being moved up dealing from all the cereal in the house. So therefore, cover the cereal. The Amar Yehuda Amarat. Another thing that is very close to Richie's house is Hamefaresh Vayotze B'Shayara. To somebody who sets out to sea before Pesach, yes. Or if our capitan, instead of going out to sea, decides to go to a lot in a caravan. Now, going to a lot in a caravan took a long time once upon a time. So in the old days when Richie used to go down to a lot, he had to decide whether he needed to do a bedika on the chometz that he was leaving behind, and so on. So what's the deal? He may not come back for many months till he gets to a lot. Does he have to make sure that the chometz is taken care of? Well, it depends. If it's 30 days before or more, he doesn't have to worry about it because at this point, we're going to see the chiyuvim click in 30 days before. But if it's already clicked in, so it's within 30 days, even though he's going out to sea, it's too late. He's got to do his bedikah before he leaves. Says Abaye, now, wait a minute. I mean, what do you mean it's too late? I mean, if he's leaving and he's not going to be there, so what's the problem? It must be that we're talking about a case where he's planning on coming back. So lo amar lo shedato lachzor, aval ein dato lachzor, ein zakuk levareir. I mean, what's the need to do bedikas chometz if nobody's going to be in the house for Pesach? I don't get that. So then you just leave it, right? Amar Rava, no, wrong. If he was going to be back, and therefore it definitely needs to be done for Pesach, so then I don't care when he's leaving. Maybe he left on Rosh Hashanah. Does it make a difference? The point is he's going to be there on Pesach. Why is he not responsible for the mitzvah even before Shloshim Yom? He's not going to be allowed to come to a house that has chametz in it, is he? So therefore, what we're talking about is exact opposite, my dear Abaye. Elo amarava hada amrit kodem Shloshim Yom eino zakuk levayir. That's exactly the opposite. This that we said, that if you're leaving 30 full days before, then you don't need to worry about it. That's only when you're not planning on coming back home. But if you are planning on coming back home, I don't give a hang when it is. It could be Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah obviously not meaning the holiday of Rosh Hashanah per se, but from the beginning of the year, meaning even Mitzray Pesach of last year. Now it's the beginning of the next year's Pesach, right? You'd already have to do a bedikah for next year's Pesach. Why? Because there's two separate issues over here. One is the chiyuv, as we saw before, the chiyuv that the Rabbanan made, which is a new mitzvah, make sure you do a bedikas chometz on Leil Arba Azar. When does that chiyuv begin? Does it begin on Leil Arba Azar, or is it the responsibility from before chometz, before Pesach, to arrange for the fact that your house will be bodek on Leil Arba Azar? Therefore, says Rava, it's a responsibility before, because that's the whole meaning of the concept of bedikas chometz, is the tashbitu z'armi batechem miyom harishon, meaning prior to Pesach. Now, the only question is, I mean, so what are we supposed to say? You're going to be living in Pesach all year round? I mean, at what point does this kick in? So that, says the Gemara, we'll see later, it kicks in the moment that you have to start worrying about the dinim of Pesach. When do you start worrying about the dinim of Pesach? 30 days before. Because 30 days before every yontiv is when we begin the learning process and therefore the mental preparations for the yontiv. So part of those mental preparations are taking into consideration what the meaning is of this tashbito and what I need to do to prepare for it. So then that would mean at this point, you could say, well, I'm leaving town. What do you mean you're leaving town? You have responsibility. So either pay somebody to do it or whatever, do it yourself before. But you can't just throw out the mitzvah once you've already entered the time that that mitzvah becomes your concern. Then there's a completely different issue of bedikas chometz. And that is the reality of needing to have a space on Pesach that is chometz free. Now, that's a different thing. Over there, even if the Chachomim had not made a mitzvah of bedikas chometz on the night of the 14th, you still would have had to take care of that yourself, right? Okay, so if you're planning on coming back, then that means that you now have to take care of that. Once you have to take care of that, I don't care when you're leaving, and once you have to take care of that, you have to take care of that in the way that the Chachomim were miyachid to take care of that. It means not hiring a cleaning crew. It means doing a real bedikas chometz before. That's the point. So Rava's approach is there's two separate issues in bedikas chometz. Very important nekuda. This leads to an interesting machlokas. It's actually a machlokas aposkim. Rashi learns over here that it's talking about if you're planning on coming back, meaning if you're planning on coming back during Pesach. Others learn, no, if you're planning on coming back within the 30-day period of Pesach, so then that means you need to worry on what if I'm delayed and so on and so forth. It's a completely different thing. But otherwise, the Pashut way of understanding it is like Rashi, because if what Rav is saying is that there's a different issue. The different issue is I can't come to a house that is not ready for Pesach. Fine, so if I'm going to come to my house 2 days before Pesach, I'll take care of it then. I don't understand. What, are you driving me crazy? I have to take care of it now? I'll take care of it when I get back. So then you'd have to say, well, maybe you won't get back. No, I don't know whether we have to worry about that, says Rashi. Where does that come from? if the whole mocker of the chiyuv is the fact that you know you have to be prepared. Okay. The same thing would be true in a different case, which turns out to also be from Rava and is very consistent. Oz the Rava Latami, because Rava says, look, if you decide to turn your kitchen into a storage house, so now you've moved your kitchen, you built a new room outside, and you've expanded the house into a new kitchen, and now this kitchen has become a storage place for all types of things that you never move out, and you turn it into that. Now, what's the din? Let me ask you something. Your kitchen was your kitchen. You moved the kitchen out, and all of a sudden the roof collapsed. So what you want to do is close up the door to the kitchen until you get things repaired. Are you mechuyev to clear out the kitchen from the collapse of the roof and make sure that you get rid of all your chametz? No. We're going to see later on that in a case where nafla lav mapolet, something covers your chametz so that it's actually inaccessible during Pesach, you do not need to worry about doing a bedika. Over here, you were the cause of the collapse, so to speak, because what you did is you piled up 3 tons worth of, you know, packages of grain or wine barrels or whatever. And I said, oh my God, it's almost Pesach, another 2 months. Am I going to have to move all of this out? So therefore comes along Rava and says, no, of course not. If it's Kodem Shloshim Yom, because this again depends on whether the mitzvah kicked in. If the mitzvah already kicked in, you said, oh my God, it's 2 weeks before Pesach, then you're darn right, you're going to have to clean it out and you're going to have to indeed do a bedika because you were already chayiv in the bedika from before. But if it's Kodem Shloshim Yom, it's not a problem. Tov Shloshim Yom, then you're going to have to be mevayer because you already had that chiyuv. Now, this is only if, and it's the same idea that Rava said here, Lo Amran Ela She'ein Da'ato Lefanoto. This is only if your intention is to leave it that way, which is the equivalent of you're not coming home. But if your intent was to clear out the storage area before or during Pesach, so then, of course, you have to take care of it because it's the same as coming back to a house that hasn't been taken care of for Pesach. Daito lefanoto, if you're going to clear it out during Yontev, afilu kodem shloshim yom, I don't care how long before, that's a different din. That's not a din in the chiyuv kicking in. That's a din in the person's knowing that he needs to be chametz free during chametz. Now, where the heck does 30 days come from? I mean, why are we taking that for granted, says the Gemara? 30 days, like you picked that out of a hat? So, honey, shloshim yom, maya vidatayo, what is that? Ah, that is based on the famous halacha, Kedetanya, shalim v'dorshim b'yachot ha-pesach kodem ha-pesach shloshim yom, and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel omer, shtei shabbatot. So here we were going according to Tanakama, in which the preparations for a yontav, the mental preparations, begin 30 days before. And where does the Tanakama get that from? My time at the Tanakama is very simple. Moshe Rabbeinu teaches all of the dinim of Pesach Sheni at the day of the Akrovas Pesach Rishon, right? So everybody comes, what are we supposed to do? It's not fair. And Moshe says, well, in another month, you're going to have your own Pesach, and here's the dinim. Oh, well, if it's another month, why don't you tell me the dinim later? Oh, that's the point, because you need to start preparing now. So here's what you're going to have to do. You know, kokochu kasa Pesach, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so why is he doing all of that? Obviously, because there's an inyan to be mazir al Pesach Sheni 30 days before. Look at the pasuk. Shenema, vayasu et ha-Pesach berishon. And at that same point, it says, vayanashim asher ayu tmeim lenefesh adam. And therefore, Moshe's response is on that day, which is 30 days before. And Reb Shimon ben Gamliel says, nach, that doesn't prove anything. Because Moshe Rabbeinu, anyway, he's giving a big shir on Ilchus Pesach, right? It's the day of the Akrovas HaPesach. He's going over everything with everybody. These guys come along and they say, so what are we supposed to do? So fine, so he puts all those halachas into context for Pesach Sheni. It doesn't mean he would have done it 30 days before if he wasn't anyway giving a big shir on all of the halachas of Pesach and saying, now this halacha you're going to have to keep for the Pesach Sheni. This one does not apply to Pesach Sheni, blah, blah, blah. So that makes a lot of sense, says Rav Shimon Gamliel, but you can't use it to prove that normally we'd be involved 30 days before, because over here, I did the mili de pischam, asked a little call mili de pischam, and he's giving a shear, so he tells you to dinner with Pesach Sheni. I'll tell you, my dear friends, it's not 30 days, it's actually 2 weeks. Where do you get that from? Because Moshe is standing on the first day of Nisan. It's Rosh Chodesh Nisan. It says, HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem, right? Okay, so Moshe is telling everybody, and Be'asor LaChodesh HaZeh V'ikhu Lachem, and then Be'arba'asor LaChodesh HaZeh. So there's 14 days before he's going to be telling them from Rosh Chodesh what it is you're going to be doing 14 days from now. Here's how to bring the Karban, Ben Arbaim, and so on. Okay, so you see, 14 days before, don't give me 30 days. So therefore, I argue and I say, these things kick in 14 days. HaKodesh Zeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim, Dabru HaKol Adat Yisrael Leimor, Basar LaKodesh HaZeh V'Kulem Ish Seh LeBeit Avot, which continues on to the Arba Asar and so on, right? Wait a minute. But how do you know that Moshe Rabbeinu said this over on Rosh Chodesh? It just says, HaKodesh HaZeh Lachem. I mean, maybe that's on the 4th of the month, the 5th of the month. I mean, all we know is that Hashem spoke to Moshe. Where does it say exactly when it took place and when Moshe responded to it? Elam Rabbah Bashimim Primed Ravina. That wasn't the Raya. The way he's leaving out half of the Raya over here. The way that we know that we're talking about Rosh Chodesh specifically is from the beginning of Bamidbar. So how does it start? Vayedaber Hashem Moshe mibidbar Sinai b'shana hashenit b'chodesh harishon, and then the next pasuk. So here, this is out of place, right? Because it only occurs in Baalosecha, but this is the first thing that happens in Bamidbar, right? Because the story of the Chumash HaPekudim, where Moshe Rabbeinu was told count Bnei Yisrael, that occurs in the second month, and this is occurring in the first month. So it says over there, "Bachodesh Harishon, va'uchsiv va'yasu bnei Yisrael." It's a Pesach b'moado. That's where we learn it from, not from Pesach Mitzrayim, but from the Pesach in the Midbar. Yeah, but I understand. I have the same question. It only says "Bachodesh Harishon." It doesn't say on Rosh Chodesh. So how do you know it wasn't the 4th of the month, the 5th of the month? Achanami, mimai debereish yarchakoy. What makes you think that? Maybe it was Ba'arba, Ba'chodesh, or Ba'chamisha, Ba'yarcha. Om Reb Nachman, that's the missing piece. The missing piece is the word Bamidbar. Ha! Because at the beginning of Bamidbar, what does it say? Vayedaber Hashem Moshe b'midbar Sinai b'ohel mo'ed b'echad l'chodesh asheni. So just like the reference at the very beginning of the book, when it talks about a month in the Midbar, it's the first day of that month. There it happens to be the second month. When it uses the same exact language later, even though that's chronologically completely out of order because that was a month earlier, but nonetheless, it's based on understanding a Gzeirah Shavah. Bamidbar b'chodesh means echad b'chodesh. Over there, Malalan Rosh Chodesh, Afkan Rosh Chodesh, and we have a perfect Gzeirah Shavah. And there we go. Now, wait a minute, says the Gemara. This is weird, actually. You know, that's what happens when we don't go to Chumash here on Erev Shabbos. But this is weird. How come it starts with the second month and then goes back to the first month? Isn't that out of order? Like, you never thought of this before, huh? So how do you explain that? Why don't we start at the beginning? So v'nichta bereishit the Chodesh HaRishon, and then go to the Chodesh HaSheni. Therefore, says the Gemara, you see an extremely important halacha here. Om Rav Anasher bar Tachliva Mishmeid Rav. This proves that the Torah does not concern itself with chronological organization. It has completely different things in mind that define what its order is. So that chronology, that's your problem. That's not my problem, says Hashem. Om Rav Anasher bar Tachliva Mishmeid Rav. Zot Omeret, Ein Mugdam Umuchar Batorah. A very firm point, which elsewhere the Midrashim bring from the Psukim and so on. No umag lotea, but over here it's clear in the Seder of the Torah. There's no way out of this one. It's as clear as could be. Omer of Papa, now hold on a minute. I mean, this can't be an overall rule that a first part of the Pasuk could have been said after the second part of the Pasuk, or like, you know, so then are we really... We don't have any structure of time. if we don't have any structure in time, then all of the limudim that we have that are structured according to time don't make any sense. Maybe a klal and a prat is really a prat and a klal. Or maybe a klal, prat, klal is actually a prat, klal, klal. I mean, I don't know. So how do we have any of these rules? It has to be structured in ways that our brain, as we read it, recreate the teaching of the thing. And if there's no responsibility for us to actually understand how this was said, how do we know that we have any right to be dorish it this way? Therefore, says Rav Papa, I mean, it only makes sense if you're telling me that where you're dealing with two separate issues, Tosis learns issues is the point. Rashi learns two separate parshios, or two separate sukkim. We'll see that in the end, the Gemara comes around to issues being for sure the point. But if you're talking about one issue, so then, obviously, ma'idu mukta mukta, u'ma'idu mukhar mukhar. At this point, you'll see in a moment why Rashi wants to make it dependent on psukim and not issues. The ilote ma'achi, if you're not going to say that, how could we possibly have a klal that says klal b'prat, ein b'klal alamashu b'prat? Maybe it's a prat and klal. And when it says prat u'klal nasa klal mosif ala prat, maybe it's a klal and a prat. So none of this makes any sense. Says the Gemara, but if that's true, so then you can ask the same question on even in Trey in Yaninami. I mean, look, I mean, if you hold like the Mandi Omar, that Klalu Prat Amru Hakim Zeh Mizeh, Ein Danino Tobe Klalu Prat, fine, okay, then I understand, then you're right. That if Lomaisa Klalu Prat are not in consecutive words, consecutive circuit, but we'll see how far this goes, and you cannot use it, then you're 100% right. And you'll say that klal and prat would have to always be within the same pasuk. But if you say that you're allowed to be done a klal, prat, or klal, even if they're in separate psukim, what about then? Says the Gemara, no. Because even if you can, it's only when it's pechad in yona. Now over here, chad in yona does mean one issue. So what they're saying is you could have a pasuk and a different pasuk, but we're still in the middle of dealing with this topic. So then, that's what I mean to say. So it's not necessarily a function of the psukim. Of a betray in yoni, that's what we're saying. We don't find that when nobody holds you could deal with a klal prat or klal that are in two separate in yoni. Now, the next issue is one of the deepest questions which we've finally reached. We know that the mevatel still needs to do a bedika. That's what we've been learning the whole time. And we had this very important machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos as to why that is true. Why does someone who was mevatel his chametz, and therefore does not have any chametz in his rishos, why does he have to go around and get all the chametz out of his rishos? So remember that the Rambam's approach was, it's because of the fact that you cannot expect regular people to be able to deal with states of mind in such a way that allows them to actually change their space by changing their consciousness of the space. We cannot be semichon people to do that. And because of that, we made this takona to go about and actually do it. Tosus understands that the issue is simply because we're afraid that it will be eaten. That's the point. So it's all very nice not to be over on Bayer Rabbi Yematzeh, but you have to actually get it away from your house. But what about the other way around? The other way around we haven't discussed. Why is it that after I get all of the chametz out of my house, finally I have to take a drink. After I get all the chametz out of my house, why do I still need to be mevatel? That is our next exciting episode.